From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words number 8. In today's podcast, political language, President Bush's evolving rhetoric on Iraq and counterterrorism. Also, the role of the Zulu concept of Ubuntu in basketball.
As a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Violiner.
Si se puede, is right. Yes, we can.
There are no knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Why, thank you, Borat. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. And you can find out more about the show, including how to subscribe to all our very, very fine podcasts, by going to theworld.org. Okay, so we're going to spend a bit of time on rhetoric, specifically the rhetoric of George W. Bush's foreign policy, which of course means largely Iraq. The president's language has changed over time, as his objectives have changed, as his popularity has changed, as the facts on the ground have changed. So we're going to consider all of that. First, I'm going to play a piece that we first reported on The Big Show last year. The Big Show is our broadcast arm, otherwise known as The World. Then we'll get an update on the president's choice of foreign policy words that brings us up to today, also with the presidential candidates. Then we'll focus on President Bush's rhetorical regrets, what he wishes he hadn't said. And finally, we'll consider that link between the NBA Finals and Ubuntu. So first off, it's President Bush's Iraq arguments, how they've changed during his presidency. Let's recall, first of all, the situation back on January 1st, 2007, when the report that I'm about to play first aired. Things in Iraq were getting worse. Sunnis and Shiites were battling each other in the streets, battling the Americans, and everyone was taking heavy casualties. The Iraqi parliament couldn't agree on very much at all, and a lot of people were saying, this is civil war. President Bush was in the process of consulting with his national security team to come up with a new Iraq strategy, a strategy that later on would come to be called the Surge. Here is The World's Matthew Bell.
The president mentioned Iraq today in his New Year's message to the American public. In a statement released by the White House, he pledged to stay on the offensive against the enemies of freedom and help move Iraq toward becoming a free, unified nation. This is just the latest variation in the president's Iraq narrative, one that began in the summer of 2002 when Saddam Hussein was still in power.
The Iraqi dictator must be disarmed. These requirements will be met, or they will be enforced.
The president's argument for disarming the Iraqi regime was initially popular. When Saddam's government was toppled in April 2003, a Pew Research Center poll found that 77% of those surveyed approved of President Bush's handling of the war. But as the months went on, no arsenals of weapons of mass destruction were ever found in Iraq, nor were links between Saddam and al-Qaeda. This helped bring a change in emphasis in the president's rhetoric on Iraq during the campaign season of 2004. The effort in Iraq went from one of disarmament to democratization.
Free countries are peaceful countries. And by serving the ideal of liberty, we're serving the deepest ideals of America. We believe that freedom is not America's gift to the world. Freedom is the Almighty God's gift to each man and woman in this world.
Political scientist Christopher Gelpy of Duke University says the president's rhetorical shift paid off at the polls.
One of the main reasons that Bush was reelected at that time is because he was successful in persuading the American public that democratizing Iraq was a way to keep America safe by denying terrorists a base from which to operate. And so the American public continued to see the war in Iraq and terrorism linked through this mechanism of democratization.
But events on the ground in Iraq told a different and increasingly bloody story. The insurgency grew in strength, sectarian violence worsened, and the president's message became less and less convincing to Americans. In a Pew poll from 2005, 58% of respondents disapproved of President Bush's handling of the war. At the same time, the president's critics accused him of not having a clear plan for Iraq. Some began calling for a timetable for bringing American troops home. Mr. Bush responded in a series of speeches that acknowledged some of the difficulties and setbacks in Iraq, but he argued vigorously that victory was still possible. Here's an excerpt from one of those speeches from late 2005.
Before our mission in Iraq is accomplished, there will be tough days ahead. Victory in Iraq will require continued sacrifice by our men and women in uniform and the continued determination of our citizens. There will be good days, and there will be bad days in this war. I reject the pessimists in Washington who say we can't win this war.
Throughout 2006, President Bush rejected the notion that Iraq had descended into civil war. He has continued to emphasize the theme of victory in most of his comments about Iraq, but his words are not convincing to most Americans. Public support has fallen to an all-time low. The latest polls put disapproval of the president's handling of the war at more than 70%. Duke University's Christopher Gelpe says that's a problem for the president.
Persuading the public that we can succeed in the mission is essential to persuading them that it's worth it to pay the costs of fighting.
Professor of Communications Diana Carlin of the University of Kansas says the president needs to change his message.
So the rhetoric isn't successful at this point because it's not moving anywhere. What he hasn't clearly defined with the rhetoric is what will constitute success, what will constitute victory.
But when it comes to defeat, Mr. Bush has been clear. Defeat in Iraq for the president would be an increased threat to the United States, whether that's because of a homicidal dictator, his alleged weapons of mass destruction, or the threat of terrorism. That's according to professor of rhetoric Robert Ivey of Indiana University. Ivey says that while the president has tinkered in the margins in his Iraq rhetoric, he's always seen the war in Iraq as an epic struggle of good versus evil. And he says that's not likely to change in the president's upcoming speech.
He sees himself as in a position of responsibility to lead and to lead a reluctant nation. So now the challenge for him is to kind of figure out how to rally the public to stay the course.
For The World, I'm Matthew Bell.
So, Matthew, since that report aired about a year and a half ago, has the president stayed the course with his rhetoric?
He has in some ways, and the way he's done that is by talking about the surge, the surge, the surge, and put all of the emphasis on the new guy in charge, General David Petraeus. And the way that Petraeus has talked about progress in the war, that he hasn't talked about victory, staying the course. He's very careful. He talks about progress and how the troop surge has made progress, but he characterizes the progress as fragile and irreversible. So he doesn't want to talk about light at the end of the tunnel. We see the end here, but we're making progress is sort of the message that he really has focused on and continued to deliver for the president.
Now, that's quite different from the two presumed nominees for the presidential race this year.
Absolutely. They couldn't be farther apart. There's, on the one hand, John McCain, which I think his message on Iraq boils down to never surrender. He doesn't use the word victory in the way that President Bush used to use before the surge. But he does talk about, I was just listening to McCain speak yesterday in New Hampshire, and he says, we're winning in Iraq. We're making progress. He doesn't think that there should be a set timetable, and he doesn't like to project things, though there was the one speech that he looked ahead to 2013 and said, I envision victory in Iraq. So he uses the word occasionally. But again, he focuses on the surge, the progress that the surge is making, and David Petraeus he describes as the right man for the job with the right strategy.
And Barack Obama?
And Barack Obama, of course, talks about the importance of getting out of Iraq. He says that going in was a mistake, that the war on terrorism, quote unquote, is important. But he says the Bush administration needs to focus on Afghanistan, the border areas with Pakistan. That's where the U.S. military needs to put its energy and time and resources. With Iraq, he talks about it's interesting that Obama doesn't say we're losing in Iraq explicitly, but it's kind of there in the way that he talks about the need to get out. And he says that the invasion of Iraq and the U.S. presence there has made the terrorism problem globally worse. So his plan is to start withdrawing troops. Of course, as soon as he is elected, he says one or two brigades a month, and that would take about a year and a half. And the big question is, what kind of wiggle room would he allow to listen to his military commanders and adjust that in some ways?
That's Matthew Bell. Matthew is the man behind the World's Election Podcast. Go to theworld.org for more on that. Now, President Bush has also done a bit of navel gazing on his own rhetoric. Let's flash back once again, this time to May 25th, 2006. This is a news conference at the White House, and someone asked the president if there's anything he regrets about his handling of Iraq. Here's his answer.
Saying, bring it on. Kind of tough talk, you know, that sent the wrong signal to people. That I learned some lessons about expressing myself maybe in a little more sophisticated manner. You know, wanted dead or alive. That kind of talk. I think in certain parts of the world, it was misinterpreted. And so I learned from that.
So it sounds as though the president was saying bad choice of words, but the right policy. Well, the president was in Europe this past week, and he went a little further down that road of introspection. He gave an interview to the Times of London, and here is Tom Baldwin of the Times describing that interview with the World's Lisa Mullins.
At the end, when we were asking him, if not how history will judge him, but perhaps how he judges himself, he went into this very reflective answer about how maybe he had used the wrong tone, the wrong rhetoric. He'd given people the impression, the world's impression, that he was a guy hell-bent on war. And he said, only people who know me really know that I'm a man of peace. Now, that's an extraordinary message to deliver to a British newspaper, a European newspaper, on your final trip to Europe after 7 years of possibly some of the worst transatlantic relations we've seen since the Second World War.
One of the things that happened after your interview with President Bush, he held a news conference, and there was one reporter at the news conference who asked him to explain whether he regretted his war rhetoric or whether he regretted having gone to war with Iraq. Let's listen to what the president said in response.
I don't regret it at all. Removing Saddam Hussein made the world a safer place. First of all, you don't get to do things over in my line of work, but I could have used better rhetoric to indicate that, one, we tried exhaustive diplomacy in Iraq. Two, that I don't like war. But no, the decision to remove Saddam Hussein was the right decision.
Well, given that the war in Iraq has been so costly and so controversial, including in Europe, if the president's regrets are limited to the terminology that he used, the rhetoric he used in going to war with Iraq, is that meaningful to Europeans?
I don't think it will transform his image overnight in Europe. He is, as he himself is aware, deeply unpopular in my country and in others. There's a recent poll done in Europe which suggested that more people in Germany, France, and Britain regard America as a, quote, force for evil, close quotes, than a force for good. Now, we asked him about that poll, and he said he felt deeply uncomfortable and saddened when his country, and he clearly loves America, is misinterpreted, misunderstood in that way. I think it's also worth noting, though, that from that same press conference where you just played a clip, the president, unprompted twice, said that all options remain on the table with regard to dealing with Iran. Now, while the phrase all options are on the table lacks some of the bellicosity of his language in a build-up to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, we know what all options on the table means. And it shows that the president substantially perhaps has not changed that much. It's merely his language.
That's Tom Baldwin of the Times of London. Okay, a change of pace now. We're in the midst of the NBA Finals. As I speak, the Boston Celtics are leading the Los Angeles Lakers 3-2, with Game 6 due to start a few hours from now. Of course, by the time you hear this podcast, it may all be over. Win or not, this has been a spectacular year for the Celtics. And a few people are saying it may have something to do with a new team slogan. It's based on an African concept called Ubuntu. That's a Zulu word, and it means, essentially, I am who I am because of who we all are. Not a surprise that this is an idea that has been taken up globally. For example, in the computer world, it's a popular and free Linux-based operating system. For more on its application in the world of basketball, we now turn to Martha Biebinger of WBUR in Boston.
The men in green chant Ubuntu in the locker room before games, wear it on practice T-shirts and wristbands, and refer to it when it really counts.
Certainly not the sight the Celtics and their fans want to see. Paul Pierce in a lot of pain.
While the Celtics star forward is carried off the floor in Game 1 of the Finals, Celtics coach Doc Rivers calls the rest of the team together.
What did the guy from South Africa say about adversity? Nothing can get you down. That's why we play 12 guys. All right? Let's beat this team.
In our country, we've got something called Ubuntu.
This is Archbishop Desmond Tutu explaining the concept during a lecture to college students last year.
In our culture, there is no such thing as a solitary individual. I want you to be all you can be, because that's the only way I can be all I can be.
Coach Rivers adopted Ubuntu at the beginning of this season after a colleague suggested it, and Rivers read some of Tutu's work. Boston Globe sports writer Mark Spears says Rivers needed a way to unify a team with a lot of new players and three superstars.
It's given them something to become a unit, to become family, to put all their egos aside, and I think it's that mentality that has helped them get to where they are right now.
Not just the mentality, the word has become part of Celtics culture, says former Celtics forward and current commentator Cedric Maxwell.
Definitely in cars right now. You'll hear one of them go, Ubuntu, though. So, and you know, they joke about it, but they want to win.
Maxwell, who was the MVP when the Celtics won the NBA championship in 1981, says Ubuntu helps Celtics superstars Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce focus on a common goal.
None of the big three last year, any one of those guys made the playoffs. So as players, sometimes they're like kids. I think they look for concepts. They look for themes that are going to bring them closer together.
While Ubuntu may be important to the team, most fans don't know it.
Have you heard of Ubuntu?
Of a what?
Ubuntu, the team slogan?
I have not.
No.
The who?
No.
No?
No. No, not at all.
Outside the Boston Garden before Sunday's game, I get 37 confused looks before I find Ed O'Neill and Suzanne Nevins from Connecticut.
Bungo. I hadn't heard it until he told me we were sitting at the bar. The Ubungo thing.
Ubungo, that means, oh, that's right.
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, that means we're together, we're a team, that's what we're here for. It's not a one-on-one thing. It's not like, oh, we got the big Kobe guy. No, we got the big three. No, we got the big five. We got the big 12.
The Celtics aren't marketing Ubuntu. But there is at least one unofficial T-shirt that merges the old Celtics with the new. Black and white hands clasped over a shamrock with Ubuntu in bold letters. Sports promoter Stephen Brown says it might be best to leave Ubuntu alone for now.
At least for this series, if it's a private moment, you know, within the team, that shouldn't be commercialized.
At least, says Brown, until the Celtics give the okay. For the world, I'm Martha Biebinger in Boston.
If you don't sound like you from there, then them quick to declare you're not an African. African. What if you're white or Indian, born from the motherland, are you not African? Well, I am African.
That's it for this edition of The World in Words. I'm Patrick Cox. Go to our website at theworld.org for more. Also, send me your comments. The address is language@pri.org. And if you're on Facebook, join our group, The World in Words. Till next time, see you.
Rocking sporty shoes, you automatically lose being African. African. If you don't sound like you from there, then them quick to declare you're not an African. African. What if you're white or Indian, born from the motherland, are you not African? Well, I am African. See, I'm an African. Without a doubt, that's what I'm about. Yes, I'm an African. Without a doubt, that's what I'm about. Said I'm an African. Without a doubt, that's what I'm about. Yes, I'm an African. Without a doubt, that's what I'm about. Yes, I'm an African.